Good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you all to tonight's Hidden Sparks Without Walls presentation. My name is Alicia Haas, and I'm the Director of School Services at Hidden Sparks and host for tonight's webinar. Hidden Sparks trains and coaches educators to find the hidden spark within every child and to help them reach their potential. For parents in New York City, we have our Parent Education Center, where parents can receive coaching and guidance to support them as parents. And last month, we ran 4 sessions for 2 schools as part of our parent learning series. These sessions covered the following topics: social skills, anxiety, and executive function. See our website for more details about the parent learning series and how you can bring it to your school community. I'm grateful that we have Ariella Azarov-Shore with us this evening to discuss the emotionally aware parent regulating yourself to support your child. As always, throughout the presentation, we encourage you to contribute your comments and questions via the chat. If you'd like the whole group to see your comments, please be sure to chat to everyone. Otherwise, you can direct your question just to me to have your question addressed. A full recording of tonight's webinar will be available in about a week. We'll let you know when it's posted and you can share it with friends and colleagues. While I introduce Ariella, please pop your location in the chat so we can see where everyone is zooming in from. Ariella Azarov-Shore is a psychotherapist in private practice and speaker in New York City and New Jersey. She enjoys working with emerging adults struggling with anxiety, depression, navigating relationships and boundaries, as well as learning to cultivate a sense of self-love. With a unique lens of self-compassion and self-acceptance, Ariella feels passionate about helping and empowering individuals to work through struggle and trauma while also holding space for self-compassion and acceptance. Ariella, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Rabbi Haas. It's so good to be here tonight with all of you. Thank you, Rabbi Haas, for having me on. Rabbi Haas is an old colleague, and it's so good to hear from you. And this is really what I feel so passionate about. When I was trying to think of a topic to speak to parents about, this one came right to me, because I think that emotional regulation and being honest with ourselves is truly half the battle. And I just want to say that showing up tonight, all of you that are here, it's 8:30 New York time. I see you're all coming in more or less from New York, New Jersey, Boca, I see. But it's either bedtime for most of you. Maybe you're putting your kids to sleep. Maybe your kids are running around. Maybe they're hanging all over you as you're trying to listen. But I really want to thank all of you for being here. And I really want you guys to thank yourselves, because showing up is first of all, having the awareness that we don't have all the tools. You know, very often when I work with parents of teenagers or kids, you know, I always say that we don't have all the tools. Like, it is so meaningful to children when parents take time out of their busy lives to go on webinars or to go to their own therapy. You know, there's a whole section in the library. I don't think we really go to libraries anymore. Some of us might, but there's a whole genre of podcasts on parenting. And that's because we don't have all the tools. So kind of owning that we need more tools, and that this is something that many people struggle with which we'll get right into. The first step is being here and showing up. And I am learning alongside you and teaching myself as a new parent. So here we go. The way that this is going to work, okay, this is me. The way that this is going to work is that I'm going to present, and I would love for this to be interactive. We're all kind of sitting here after a long day. So I'd love for this to be interactive and I'll kind of give different prompts that you can put into the chat. And we're going to leave time at the end for questions, but I do have the chat open here. My tech savvy husband, thank you. Help me, because I am so tech illiterate. So I'm going to be checking the chat as well, if as I go, there are questions. Okay. Okay. So kind of the overview of what we are going to be kind of covering tonight is really understanding emotional regulation and the role that it plays in effective parenting, and really understanding, I'm going to use the word nervous system a lot tonight, and that's part of really understanding from a neuroscience lens of what's going on in our body when we get dysregulated. I'm also going to teach you all mechanisms. You all want to walk away. I think everyone nowadays wants skills. Like, okay, this all sounds nice, but what do I do now? So I tried to really break it down with some easy takeaways. If you brought a pen and paper or a notepad on your phone, please, you know, write down some of the tools that I'll share tonight. Really understanding, why does parenting activate emotional triggers, and what are some self-regulation strategies that we ourselves can practice and model for our children? And we're going to talk a little bit about development and how parental regulation supports child development and the role of co-regulation. So really my goal tonight is to help everybody create a calmer emotional climate at home. That sounds nice, right? So I want everybody to just take a moment to feel your feet on the floor. Feel your feet on the floor. Feel your chair kind of shift right and left. And just close your eyes. Bring your hands to your lap. Don't worry, it's not a long meditation. It's just a breath. And just close your eyes here for a second, okay? And take a deep breath through your nose and out through your mouth. But like a good deep breath, like there's a string pulling your back all the way to the back of the chair. And when you exhale, like your stomach is kind of protruding out. Take a deep breath through your nose. Exhale through your mouth and keep your eyes closed here for a moment. And put aside anything that you still have to do tonight, whether it's dishes, cleaning up from dinner, doing laundry, folding laundry, all of that is going to be there in 45 minutes. And give yourself the chance and the opportunity to be here with yourself, to learn and to really understand yourself and your triggers and your reactivity and to sh how to show up for your children and your spouse and your family. And I want you to really take a moment to thank yourself for self-compassion, to thank yourself for showing up tonight and normalizing that parenting is challenging. Yes, there are many, many people registered for this webinar, and there are many people that struggle with parenting, and it's normal. So just take another deep breath in here. Inhale all the things you have to do, and exhale, creating an intention that you're just letting yourself be present for the next 45 minutes. Okay, you can open your eyes. So the first place that, I would like to start that, okay, one second. Okay, this is what I wanted. I was looking for a quote. Sorry, it went to the wrong slide. I was looking for a quote. I love quotes. I think that they're so meaningful. I was looking for a quote that had to do with shame that was very fitting for what we are going to be speaking about tonight. And I think that there's a lot of shame when we talk about unproud moments. How many times do we hear friends or family say, like, I really lost it at my children, or I was just such a bad version of myself tonight, and I just feel so bad, and there's so much shame that's connected to unproud moments. And Harriet Lerner may has this quote that says, shame is the fear of disconnection, the fear that something we've done or failed to do makes us unworthy of connection. And I think that's so true, right? Like when we get so hard on ourselves that we've lost it or we've lost our cool or we ourselves are dysregulated in front of our children, there's shame connected to that. And what we are going to talk about tonight is that you are worthy of connection and you are worthy of connection with yourself and with your children. So we're releasing all shame and normalizing and talking about parenting and regulating. So the first place that we want to start is really understanding your nervous system. So I think that when we move through parenting and through everyday life, there are all of these thoughts that enter our mind, right? So some of you might be familiar with CBT, which is cognitive behavior therapy, which is really the understanding that our thoughts connect to our feelings, which connect to our behavior, right? So it's the modality of thinking that all of our behavior is fueled by a way that we're thinking, right? When we're thinking something, that's then what kind of triggers how we feel, which triggers our behavior. So first, what I really wanted to focus on is awareness around the thoughts that arise when you're beginning to feel overwhelmed, right? So we're not going to use the chat yet, but I want you all to kind of think about in your own minds of a moment that came up for you where you started to have thoughts that started to get you a bit dysregulated, right? So something like, I should be cleaning the kitchen, or I still have to put the other kids to sleep, or I haven't even eaten dinner myself yet, or I'm failing as a parent, right? Maybe if any of those resonate, maybe you could put a thumbs up in the chat, right? That how these thoughts kind of, they come so quickly, right? Everything is going on around you. Yes. Okay, we're getting a lot of hands. Yes. So much can be going on around you. And then you kind of start telling yourself the story in your mind of what you should be doing or where you should be. And that's really in the moment. Yes, thank you all for participating. That gets you dysregulated, right? So the first step is to have awareness around what are the thoughts that I'm having when I start to feel overwhelmed. And the first telltale sign I really learned, in somatic work, in Greek, somatic, soma means body. In somatic work, it really means where in your body there are emotions that are showing up. So it's really the first, it's your best alarm clock. It's like when you meet someone and there's like a pit in your stomach, right? Sometimes that's like, okay, something's wrong here, something doesn't feel right. So also when you're dysregulated, notice where in your body you start to feel it, right? Do your cheeks feel hot? Does your heart start beating fast, right? Do you start to like blur your words? Where in your body do you have a tension headache? Do you start to feel that tension and that sense of feeling overwhelmed? Right. And then once you can connect where in your body you feel it, you can kind of trace it back to the thoughts. So first, having awareness around the thoughts when you're beginning to feel overwhelmed. So classic CBT 101, right, is that we like to identify the thoughts and then we like to replace the thoughts. So once you have awareness of, okay, these are the thoughts that I'm having, I'm very clearly overwhelmed, right? And I just want to add in, I have many clients I've worked with that are also sensory, and someone's pulling on you and you're dirty, and someone's screaming, right? That's like a perfect recipe to be dysregulated, right? When you're sensory sensitive and there's just so much stimulation coming at you, that's also kind of a telltale sign of, okay, I need a moment, which we'll talk about in a second. But this piece of replacing the thoughts is super important. So rerouting stressful thoughts helps calm the nervous system and bring you back to the present, which really makes it easier to pause and respond with greater calm and intention, right? So we really need to, it's a lot of self-work. Like what I'm describing here in the middle of a chaotic moment at home, it's a lot of internal work, right? It's a lot of pausing and thinking, which I know in the moment we don't always have so much time, but these techniques are going to be so helpful to you, even if you need to walk away, which we'll talk about tools and coping in a moment. But these are really important kind of skills for you to start learning or language to start incorporating to understand yourself a little better. Because before you could try to understand your child, you need to understand what's going on for you. So kind of trying to replace the thoughts of, oh, I need to put this other kid to sleep, or I need to clean the kitchen. Try telling yourself like, okay, I'm exactly where I need to be, right? Everything else can wait. The dishes, the laundry, everything can wait, right? My child is having a hard time, not giving me a hard time. That one is so important, right? My child is having a hard time. They're having a hard time regulating. But when we say he's giving me a hard time, it could feel like he or she is giving you a hard time, but they're struggling too, right? Telling yourself I can handle this moment, or this moment will pass, right? That it's not always going to feel this way. I think we all do a really good job at convincing ourselves like it's always going to feel this way, right? Does that resonate for people? It's like it's never going to feel any different. It's always going to feel chaotic, or my child is always going to be like this. And that's very absolute, right? And that's actually a thinking trap. So reminding yourself this moment will pass, and even I'm safe in this breath, right? It's like taking a breath, feeling your feet on the floor. Feeling your feet on the floor is everything, because children need a settled body and not a perfect parent. I'm going to say that again. Children don't need a perfect parent, right? They don't need someone who's perfect. None of us are perfect. That's just not how we were created, right? We were created flawed. That's why we're all here, right? We all need skills. I need skills, right? And feeling your feet on the floor is kind of feeling like something is holding me up. Because when you start to get so anxious and so dysregulated, you almost feel like, oh my gosh, you're just floating, right? And you're never going to feel grounded. So feet on floor, wherever you are, you're on a rocking chair, you're in the kitchen, you take a moment, you sit down, or you're standing, and you feel your feet on the floor, because children need a settled body. And we're going to talk about how to do that in a moment. But settled body, not a perfect parent. So let's talk a little bit about the importance of regulation, right? So I think a really important part is tolerating the discomfort. It is not fun. It's not comfortable at all. Well, I have been there, to feel dysregulated. It is not enjoyable. We all want to skip to the good part, right? But the hard thing is, and we're going to talk about how this is modeled for your children, is that regulation doesn't mean removing emotions, right? It doesn't mean that you just snap out of it and just be in a good mood. It means that we actually have to stay with the discomfort without reacting immediately, right? So when emotions are high and everybody is kind of yelling, right, we tend to react from our emotional brain rather than responding thoughtfully. right? So our nervous system is activated and our thinking brain is almost like turned off, right? We're not thinking rationally, we're emotionally reactive. And we are emotionally reactive when we are not regulated, right? So that's why it's so important to tolerate feeling uncomfortable. I know it's a hard thing to say, but it's true. And we need to kind of own it and understand it that we can't allow the behavior to guide, that first we need to calm our nervous system and we need to be really honest with ourselves. You know, this past weekend I spent with my in-law family, and I have a brother-in-law who is a breath work teacher. He's amazing, and he has four little kids. And we were sitting at the Shabbos table at Shabbos lunch, and he literally had kids like hanging off everywhere. Like there was nowhere else for a kid to go. They were like hanging all over him, and he like wasn't eating, and he was just calm. And I said, Menachem, are you good? Like, are you okay? He's like, I'm at zero. I'm just at zero. You're seeing me at zero. And I told him I'm going to quote him tonight. And I loved that because that is owning where he's at. He wasn't dysregulated. He wasn't freaking out, but he was owning, like, I am depleted. You're seeing me at zero. And there was a certain ownership about that that I really admired. And it really stayed with me because the more honest we are with where we're at, right? When we're drained and we're burnt out and we're at zero, owning it instead of fighting it is so, it's so restorative and it's so healing. So it allows your nervous system also to be more calm because you're just being honest with yourself. I thought that was great. So let's understand a little bit. We'll put on like our neuroscience hats for a moment just to understand. I don't think we could talk about regulation without understanding the neuroscience of our brains, right? So the amygdala is the part of the brain that really looks for danger. It tries to protect us, right? It tries to keep us safe. It's kind of like, as I was saying, in your body, it's like our internal alarm system, right? And then we have a stress response. So when it senses some type of threat, it quickly activates into fight, flight, or freeze. Right, either you fight the moment, you flight, you're like, okay, I'm getting out of here. You give it to your spouse, right? Or you just kind of leave the kids alone for a moment, or you freeze. And that can look like a total shutdown, right? And I'm wondering if, as you guys are reading this, if this resonates, that there are really three active stages that the nervous system sends us into when we are overwhelmed. And activation, right? When your nervous system is activated, as I was saying before, it makes it very hard to think clearly and to stay calm or to even solve any problems, right? So the thinking part of our brain is completely turned off. And then we're in this place of responding from a reactive place, right? So that's kind of the science behind what's happening in our brains. Right. So, as I said before, there's calm and regulated, right? There's three states. The calm and regulated state helps you be patient, present, and safe, right? Which can then help you listen effectively, right? You can really sit with your kid and say, what's going on? I see that you're really upset, or I see that you're really, you can even teach them the word dysregulated. I could see that you have big emotions, you have big feelings. What's going on? Then you can respond thoughtfully. Right. And I tried to map it out what this would look like in parenting. Then there's a state that's activated, right? You are stressed, and that looks like overwhelmed, frustrated. And then you may snap, yell, rush to control, or the anxiety increases, right? I married somebody very calm. So I always joke that sometimes need to borrow his nervous system when in a moment of intensity, right? Because when we're activated and when we're stressed, we're not thinking clearly. Right. And we'll talk about for ourselves how to release that and how to control it. But first we're just owning it. Like we're all gonna channel my brother-in-law, just owning the state that you get into, right? And especially owning it with your spouse of saying when you're at zero. And the third state is really shut down and freeze, right? You're emotionally drained, you're numb, and I'm sure this happens to a lot of people, and you withdraw, right? You just have like a lack of energy to engage, right? How many of us say, like, oh, I just don't have it in me, right? I'm just like, I'm so disconnected. I'm wondering if it would be, if everyone would feel safe to maybe write in the chat, you know, as we're talking about this, what state you often find yourself in. I'd be curious. We'd be curious. We're here to learn from each other also. If that feels comfortable, I think that would be interesting. Yeah, so take a moment. Shut down, activated, anxious. Okay, between calm and activated. Yes, there's also here in therapy, we believe in the gray. Yes, there is middle. Yeah, okay. Anxious. Yeah, it's overwhelming. Overwhelming. Yeah, that's interesting. Activated and an occasional shutdown, that it can lead to that, when you're so activated and maybe you function from that place, and then there's that shutdown, right? Because you've kind of drained yourself. Yes, that's such a good point. Yes, that you want to be available to everyone. Wives, you want to be available to your husband. Husbands, you want to be available to your wife, but then there's just so much to do, and we're only human. Okay, that's great. You see, we're not alone. So this is, I don't know if some of you have heard of the vagus nerve. Okay. So the vagus nerve is the soul nerve. I like to call it the soul nerve because it's that part of our system that regulates the nervous system. So very often I work with a lot of clients who've been through trauma. I'm a trauma therapist, and we like to activate the vagus nerve to calm your system, right? So especially people that have been through trauma, chaos is going to feel very unsafe in your body, right? Whenever you get into chaos, if it's a fight, if it's an argument, if everyone's yelling around you, right? So the vagus nerve is the nerve that we want to activate because that's what helps everything regulate, right? So it's the main nerve is of the parasympathetic nervous system, right? That's really what's responsible for helping our body kind of reach that space of regulation and safety after stress, right? So when it's activated, that's the nerve that we want to activate to calm things down, which helps us connect to ourselves and connect to people around us, right? And it also helps us think clearly. So we're going to get into it a little bit more, but the polyvagal theory is really how we scan for safety and for danger, right? So when we sense any safety, any sense of danger, it shifts us into those three states, right? So we really need to calm that nerve to say, okay, wait, everything is okay, right? We kind of want to preserve our overwhelmness or our intensity for when there is an actual danger. But when it's, chaos at home and the baby's crying and there's so much going on, that's when we need to really calm our vagus nerve, right? We need to activate, I'm sorry, our vagus nerve to calm our nervous system. So the polyvagal theory is really important because it's trying to understand how our body is trying to protect us instead of working against us. So here are some natural techniques that can stimulate the vagus nerve. So, I know this can sound, bear with me, some of these techniques might, speak to some of you, they may not, but I tried to choose ones that would speak to everyone in a different way. Singing is one way to stimulate the vagus nerve, right? So I know for me personally, I love music. I always have music on, and it really helps with regulating yourself, right? So singing is one way. Humming, chanting, singing are exercises that increase your heart rate, right, variability, and improve psychological well-being and quality of life. So singing is one way. Exercise is so good for your brain's cognitive faculties, and it's just good for stimulating that vagus nerve, just any kind of movement. It's interesting because a really big part of psychology is that when you are dysregulated, you actually have to disrupt the pattern. That could be a whole webinar on its own. But when we stay stagnant, right, and there's chaos around us and we just stay sitting or stagnant, nothing can change, right? Your nervous system can't reset when the environment stays the same, right? Are you guys with me? So it's really important to get moving, to go outside. We'll talk about the second cold exposure, right? That's a big DBT, is dialectical behavior therapy, and it's treated for a lot of mood disorders and personality disorders, but more so now it's used for a lot of, they have really great skills. And one of the best skills is TIP, which basically essentially is trying to change the body temperature of your body in the state that you're in. So one way that you shift that is with cold exposure. So maybe it's going to the sink and just like splashing your face with water. Maybe it's taking some ice cubes and holding them in your hand. Maybe it's going outside for a minute and just getting fresh air. Maybe it's taking a cold shower, drinking a glass of water, but any type of cold exposure can stimulate your vagus nerve to calm the system. Sure, yes, you can get a copy of the slides. I think they were sent out with the link, but we'll get that to you. I just want to look at the chat just for a second. Why you feel this more prevalent today than 20
Yeah,
years ago?
Ariel, while you do that, I'm just gonna say yes. The slides will be sent out again afterwards, along with the recording, and can be accessed also on our website too. So both in the email and on our website. So back to you.
Okay, good. We could talk about that more after, but there are many different reasons why this could be more prevalent today than 20 years ago. I think that's a whole, I'm going to pause that. I'm going to keep that thought for after, if that's okay. So cold exposure yoga is a great release. It really increases the vagus nerve and helps you find calm, especially when you struggle already with anxiety or depression. And then chaos and dysregulation can feel even more intense. Laughing, I know that sounds kind of funny, but maybe, counting on your spouse to use some humor to diffuse. I know that's helpful for me sometimes, right? Maybe taking a break and watching something on Instagram or a TikTok or I don't know, an SNL, something that makes you laugh. Maybe just taking a break and counting on your partner or support in your life to help you. So deep breathing, the kind of like how we started, right? The way we started this session is really with breathing slowly and deeply. Sometimes we think of deep breath as like that's not a deep breath, right? Like really deep breath, like a string is pulling your back all the way to the back of the chair, and open mouth exhale, right? With your whole belly kind of protruding out, and kind of do this, you could do it. There's a lot of different types of deep breathing, but there's one that you can kind of inhale on four, hold for four, exhale for four. So that's a definitely a good way to lower your blood pressure, your heart rate, and to just pause everything. I had the beautiful gift of becoming a mom 15 months ago after a long time of waiting, and I have never breathed more in my life. And I've been through a lot, and I use breathing so much, especially when a baby's crying and they can't talk to you and you don't know what to do. Breathing is so important. A lot of counting. I also count a lot, counting, gargling, thoughtful meditation, right? So kind of getting into some type of routine. And speaking of routine, something that I think is also important is to create some type of routine in your home. So what that can look like is, depends. I know we have parents of all different ages, younger kids, teenagers, maybe adults, maybe you're just here because you want to learn about regulation yourself, right? So I'm trying to kind of broaden this to all different ages, but I do think that routine, kids and teenagers, because teenagers are just kids in a bigger body, right? Their brains are not fully formed. They need the same regulation and modeling. But I think creating some type of routine is really helpful. I'm actually going to share something. I shared this with a mom friend of mine the other day, that something that I started to do with my baby. I give him his bottle at night, and I don't even know if my husband knows I do this, and I kind of go through our day of what he had for lunch and who he hung out with that day and what we did. And then I say, and then you had dinner and now your belly is full and you're clean and all is well. Like I end every bottle, nighttime bottle, with all is well. And that has been really grounding. I'm sharing personally for me, because that's kind of like reminding myself, like, okay, Ariella, all is well. Like, we're okay. He ate, he's clean, and we're going to sleep. So creating some type of structure like that, even like a routine for yourself, would be really helpful. So let's talk a little bit about the power of co-regulation. And I didn't say this in the beginning, but I will pause at 9:20 so we can kind of ask questions and kind of talk. So the power of co-regulation. Okay, so this is really important. Children borrow our calm. They do, right? You are the energy source of your home. Right? Like I like to kind of think about it. I talk to parents about this all the time, that, imagine a house is built, right? And you have the cement in the ground, and the parents are kind of the anchors in the ground, right? And when one is a little bit wobbly, the house is wobbly, right? Like it's gonna not fall apart, but it can feel like that. So children really sense our energy. They see how we are, and they're looking to us for energy and for modeling of what's going on. Am I safe? Just like we're talking about, us sensing, our body sensing for danger, so are our kids. They have the same nervous system that they were given, right? And they need to know, like, okay, I'm good, right? But like when mom or dad, Ema or Abba, lose their cool, right? Then something's wrong. So regulation is a shared process, right? It's not something that kids can do alone. And I know this is like intense, but they do rely on our internal state, right? Of how we are. I see someone's writing, they sense our feelings no matter how little they are, even newborns for sure. Yes, they really, really sense. And that's why we're all here, right? Because we are kind of like their anchor in their own emotional storm. You know, I'm sure everyone here could think about, you know, their kid tantruming at some point. Taking a deep breath for all of you, right? Having like a real tantrum. And you're just supposed to be this like calm, regulated person, right? You're like the other day I saw on Target, like this 3-year-old was just freaking out. So just dysregulated. And the mom was so calm. I was so impressed. And it's really hard. Like, let's just understand it's hard to be the anchor in their just emotional storm, right? But the truth is that your calm nervous system, is what's going to help their nervous system settle, right? Sometimes putting words to what they're feeling or being able to just say you're really frustrated right now, or you really wanted that toy, or just saying it out loud, I think also just regulates both of you because you're kind of just saying what is going on for everybody. So the simple ways to really co-regulate is to breathe, right? To take breaths together, right? To say like you're really upset right now, let's take a breath. Like really practicing it. And to name it, to notice and name the feeling without any judgment, but to say you're really upset right now. I see that you're really upset, or you're really not feeling well, or you had a really hard day at school. And when you notice it and you allow yourself to name it, you know, without them feeling any judgment, that's really important. You know, and just like I was saying before, like understanding our body check, like our body really holds a score in every way. Allowing your child to learn that also, kind of like where do you feel it in your body? You know, do you feel, is your heart beating fast? Is your face red? You know, are your palms sweaty? Like where in your body do you feel it? And there's something really special about just physical touch, I think, with your child, of really being able to just sit next to them and to hug them, right? Like sometimes all a kid needs is just like a tight hug. Not that that's always, I know people are probably sitting here like, really, Ariella? That's not always what it takes. But co-regulation is sometimes about them just being in your calm presence. So this is one of my, remember I told you I love quotes. This is one of my favorite quotes that I feel like can be applied to so many different stages of life. You know, Viktor Frankl was a psychiatrist from Austria who was in the Holocaust. He wrote Man's Search for Meaning. And my favorite quote, right, is between stimulus and response, there's a space. And in that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. Wow, first of all, written from a man who was literally in the Holocaust. How powerful is this? So this is what I like to call the pause, right? Reacting versus responding. And this is a very, very big shift. When you really incorporate this in many areas of your life, things will really shift. And when I talk about healing, this is a really healing idea that between stimulus and response, right? Between a situation that happens and the way you respond, there's a pause, right? Like a space bar on our computers. There's a pause. And in that pause, we get to choose how we want to respond. And how we want to respond is really what helps us feel our freedom, right? And that's going to really determine, in a sense, in parenting, what's going to happen next. So I really love that because I think what we're talking about here is the power of the pause. And when we pause, we're allowing ourselves to take a moment and to take a step back. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about parenting triggers. And this is where we're going to kind of use the chat again, but all parents feel dysregulated sometimes. It just how it is. Normal. We're seeing here a lot of people struggle with this, very normal. So let's understand a little bit of why it's hard to stay regulated. And as I talk, you know, if you could put in the chat, I'd be curious to hear from you guys. Like, what are the things that are triggering for your own reflective process? If you don't want to share, you know, you could write it on a piece of paper with a pen. But really take a moment to reflect, right? Consider this like your free therapy session of reflective kind of listening. What are the things that make you feel triggered, right? So there are external triggers, right? Which is work pressure, financial stress, right? Sensory, as I was saying, sensory overstimulation, right? Think about it. You come home from work, it's a long day, and you're coming into chaos sometimes. It's really, really challenging. Financial stress, oh, yes. Having children in this world is very expensive. Yeah. Sometimes there's internal stress, right? Which is unmet personal needs. Maybe you walked in and you feel like, I don't know, your spouse didn't ask how your day was, or you didn't really feel supported that day, right? Or you were alone with the baby and you were overwhelmed, right? Maybe you had your own deep guilt of losing it, having an unproud moment. Perfectionism is huge. It's huge. Sometimes feeling like I have to be this perfect parent, that can kind of make you dysregulated and situational, right? Sometimes they're whining, transitions. I know that could be really challenging. Bedtime or siblings fighting. Yes. Yeah. So I'm going to share a little bit of what people, thank you for everybody kind of sharing in the chat. Yeah. So external, internal. Biggest trigger is when my child is screaming, crying, resisting sleep. My nervous system goes crazy. I have to work so hard to stay calm. That is the hardest thing. That is so challenging because, and I am right there with you, that we don't know what to do and this baby can't respond to us. And it's like, what do they want? And then we have to stay calm in that moment is extremely dysregulating. I think that's where feeling your feet on the ground and counting or singing a song, that's right, that's activating that vagus nerve. Unmet personal needs, not making a priority to do the things I need to take care of myself, gym, etc. Oh yeah. Oh yes, as a parent, it's hard to find time for yourself, that is for sure. Siblings fighting is a trigger. Of course it is. You're trying to create a flow. You're trying to create a schedule, and then they're fighting, of course, and that just adds the chaos. Homework, dinner, whining, lack of restful sleep. You know, it's funny. The person that just wrote that, when I became a mom, I thought it was the funniest thing that they said, you know, oh, make sure you sleep. It's like, what? When exactly? Am I supposed to sleep? We have to normalize that, right? It's like really hard. But yes, getting the sleep when you can and a lack of restful sleep and sleep deprivation is extremely dysregulating. I think in postpartum, that might have been the hardest thing for me to adjust to personally. Yeah, you cannot think clearly when you have not slept sufficiently. Okay, there's a lot here. I love this. I'm going to take another minute because I want to finish the slides. Yes, to a child not doing as they're told, raising teens. Yes, being there for everyone and not giving time for me too. You know, self-care is kind of like trending, but it's really serious. Like even carving out a phone conversation or a coffee, it's so healing and it's like refueling for parents. Yeah. A morning rush, yes, is so hard. Sometimes just finding time to make yourself a coffee is like your self-care of the day. Yes, the morning rush, okay. Okay, beautiful. Thank you for sharing. So, building emotional resilience. So, we're getting to the end of the webinar. We have a few more minutes here, but as I was saying before, that creating, right, emotional, all of this is to help our children and ourselves become more resilient, right? When you go through hard times, that's how you become resilient. So I think a way to build resilience is creating some type of daily habit that supports your regulation, that which is obviously, as we know, the foundation of a resilient nervous system, right? Is through habits. So as we said, sleep, which is really challenging sometimes, but yes, we are going to say it is important to try to prioritize rest, breaks, moments of stillness throughout the day. So I love that of taking mindful breaks when you're losing it, tapping into the support around you, or saying to your child, mommy needs a minute, you know, Abba, Tati, daddy needs a minute. I'm gonna walk, I'm gonna come right back, but I'm feeling a little frustrated. That is so healthy, right? Being able to take breaks, movement, right? Releasing that stored stress and support, connecting with others to share the load, right? Maybe it's a group chat. Maybe it's a sibling, a parent, your spouse, right? But really reaching out to support to help you. And a way that we help our child through big feelings, if, as I said, is really modeling regulation. It's okay to say, I need a minute. Mommy needs a minute, right? Or saying to your spouse, like, I need a minute. I need to shift. I need you to take over. It's showing how you calm yourself, like explicitly saying that is showing that you are calming yourself. And validating emotions, right? Like you're really mad at me right now. I'm here. Really avoiding to jump or solve it, the problem immediately is a huge one. And I know we all want to, but the way that we build resilience is through being with them in that moment. Like, you're mad, or you're hurt, or you're upset. I'm here. That is so important. Oh my gosh, I can't even tell you. I work a lot with adults, and there's so much inner child work that we do of like speaking to that little girl or that little boy inside. That's a whole nother conversation. I don't want to digress too much, but really being able to be in the moment is a very, very healthy tool to do. I'll just say that helps them be healthy adults as well. And loving boundaries, like warm, clear, and consistent limits, that's really what helps. The power of repair. John Gottman actually says that the number one tool in relationships is knowing that there's repair. So for all of you here who are listening and thinking, wow, that's me, or wow, I really, had hard moments, I had unproud moments. No one gets it right all the time. Welcome to the club. And repair is so important because it teaches resilience and it teaches trust. And it shows your child that disconnection isn't permanent, right? It's temporary. Saying something like, I got frustrated and yelled, that must have felt scary. I'm sorry. I'm working on taking a pause next time. How amazing. That is so healthy, right? You're owning it. You're not defending yourself. You're saying, yeah, I got frustrated and I yelled. That must have been really scary for you. You're really owning how that felt. I'm working on taking a pause next time. You're instilling in their mind what they need to do or what they can do the next time that they feel frustrated. So I think the important piece, and this is what John Gottman speaks about. And those of you that don't know, John Gottman is like the relationship guru. He's incredible. Him and his wife have a whole institution, many books. They're incredible. He talks a lot about focusing on what different looks like next time, really saying it explicitly. And this is a good marriage tip as well, of what am I going to do differently next time is really important. So here are some key takeaways, and we'll send you the slides, or you could write these down, but I really wanted to break it down clearly for everyone that children can't calm down until they feel calm by you, right? And your calm becomes their calm. Connection is the fastest path back to regulation. Connection. Obviously, if a kid does something that requires discipline, that's another conversation. But connection is the best way back to regulate everybody. Children don't bother. Borrow our logic first, right? They borrow our nervous system. And your calm nervous system is your most powerful tool. And that's why I took so much time tonight to really talk about ways that we can regulate, because that is going to be the most powerful tool for the entire family, especially for yourself. So I'm going to actually pause here. I know I kind of went quickly in the last one, but I do want to open up here for any questions or comments. I would love to stay connected. This is a topic that I feel so passionate about. Here's my Instagram handle, here's my website, here's my email. I would love to hear from you. And thank you for joining tonight. And I'd love to open up to questions that you could write here in the chat, or comments, or perhaps something that I spoke about that you'd want to hear more about.
I'm going to share a question that somebody sent me, Ariella.
Yes.
What do you do when a child rejects breathing, touch, etc., even when I try to establish those co-regulation ideas at a calm time?
Okay. It sounds like this might be a kid who has some sensory, right? Doesn't want to be touched. That's a very good question. You don't touch your child, right? You own their boundary. I would even like commend them for saying, like, I appreciate you telling me you don't want to be touched. And I think that's where you could use words like, what do you need right now, right? If the co-regulation, there are many different ways to co-regulate, so it doesn't have to be with giving them a hug. It could be just sitting next to them without touching, but calmly, maybe breathing together, or maybe empowering them of how can I be here for you right now. And naming for them, you are very clearly upset, or you are very clearly dysregulated. I think that that's a really good place to start. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Were there any other write-has that came in on your end?
None yet,
Okay.
but people should feel free to send any questions via the chat now.
Yeah. What is a good book you recommend reading? Oh my gosh, there are so many. There are so many. Dr. Becky is really good. I see somebody just wrote that in. If you're talking about regulation, hold on one story, one second. I just want to look one thing up. If you're talking about regulation, definitely Dr. Becky, A Feeling Good Inside is a really, really good one. I'm going to put it in the chat. I just have to look it up. I don't want to take the time right now. Oh, yes. For teenagers, I really love the book Brainstorm by Daniel Siegel. Really, really important one. I'm going to just move to the questions and I'll get back to it. Okay. What would you recommend for a situation where the child beats you to getting dysregulated, that it makes you dysregulated? Good question. Very good question. I think that's very common, that your kid gets dysregulated first and then it kind of becomes contagious, then you become dysregulated. So I think that's a situation where, just to draw on kind of what we discussed just now, is first of all to notice that you're dysregulated. That was just your trigger, right? Your child becoming dysregulated is the trigger to you being dysregulated. So you need to do all the things that we kind of spoke about. Own and name, I'm dysregulated right now because my child is freaking out, right? And then you have to actively find the things that work for you, maybe from something that we've mentioned, a break, leaning on your partner for support, whatever you have to do to activate. Now you guys have new words to activate that vagus nerve, right? To calm your nervous system. And then you come back to responding to your dysregulated child. But you can't respond from a dysregulated place. Okay. How do you recommend trying to help a young toddler regulate, especially when they're too young to communicate with speech? I am right there with you. I am deep in toddler stage. I think that's a really important question. What I find, I talk a lot. I talk to my baby so much, and I think that's really helpful, because of course they can't say this is what I'm feeling, but you kind of say, oh my gosh, you're so overtired, or oh my gosh, we're in a new place and it's hard for you to sleep. Like kind of saying it to them, I think that it also calms you because you're kind of naming what you think is going on. So it kind of calms yourself. Do you know what I mean? By being able to say, okay, this is a lot right now. And I think you staying really calm, because I think especially all ages, but newborns, toddlers, they also pick up on your energy. So maybe putting words to it for them of what you think might be going on. Oh, good. Thank you for joining. I'm glad it was helpful. The author of Brainstorm is Daniel Siegel. Parent dysregulated, child or young teen is dysregulated and she needs punishment. How's this handled? Yeah. So that's a whole other part, right? That if they've done something that is harmful to others or isn't aligned, with your family's values, of course, there needs to be some type of discipline. We can't just be dysregulated without boundaries. There's a difference between child and young teen. Do you know what I mean? So does the teenager need your help to say, it seems you need to go to your room to calm down? Or maybe you need to take a walk right now. But there's definitely room to kind of give that discipline, or to create that consequence or whatever it might look like. Maybe you need to sit in your room for however old they are, or, it's hard to know because this is kind of vague. I don't know how old a child or teen is, but there's definitely room, of course, for discipline, even if they're dysregulated. But there have to be boundaries around what we do when we're dysregulated. And if it becomes, if a kid starts hitting their sibling or hitting you, there have to be boundaries around that. I need some advice as to how I can help my son navigate when I impose limits on how much time he can have on screen time. He becomes aggressive and oppositional. Yes, this is really hard. This is really, really hard. Something that actually I learned from my sister is setting a timer for screen time, which I think can be really helpful because you're empowering them of saying, okay, here's, I don't know if you put it on like the microwave or if they have a phone or something near them, but you can have them kind of set the timer for themselves and then they can see, right? Because with oppositional, right, with oppositional children, something that's very helpful sometimes is like the illusion of control. So they feel like you're giving them control, but you're really in control, right? So saying to your child something like, how many minutes do you think would be good for you to have? How many minutes do you want to have? If he says like an hour, then obviously you could come down, but you could find a middle ground, and that's actually the illusion of control. I hope that resonates. I hope that's helpful. Thank you so much. My young son comes from a long day dysregulated, and this gave me insight of how to try to help him. It was very informative. I'm so glad. I'm so glad. Yes. I have a family I work with that the daughter is a teenager, and she just likes to go to her room at the end of the day, and like the whole family personalizes it. But it's just how she needs to unwind. And I think especially in the yeshiva system, it's a long day. They have Lumi Day Kodesh in English, and it's just a very long day, and they need ways to unwind. So I'm glad that this was helpful. Any suggestions to help regulate a 16-year-old when they are dysregulated? He becomes angry at times. I think what's so important when we talk about teenagers, and you should definitely read Brainstorm because Daniel Siegel really breaks down what can often feel like a brainstorm for teenagers, is really knowing that their brains are not for like they're not developed, right? They are functioning from an emotional place. Their amygdala is activated. It's emotional. Their prefrontal cortex, right, where we make rational decisions, we understand consequences, is not formed. So they look like an adult, but we have to remember that they are not. So a way that you can help them regulate when they're dysregulated, I think would be to offer, like, okay, you are clearly dysregulated, or you are mad, you had a hard day, you're mad at me and dad, whatever it might be. What do you feel you need to do? And give them suggestions. Do you need to listen to music? Do you need to take a breath? Do you need to, go to the gym and release this energy? But you need to help them do something to shift. And I find, especially with teens, when you just talk about it, it kind of fuels it. Remember what I was saying before about needing to reset our nervous system? And that can't reset to regulate if we're in the same environment. I think that a 16-year-old might need the words. They might need your help, right? Again, they're activated from an emotional place. They may need your help to name it or to talk through it, but then to shift, right? They might need help or ideas of what to do, and you could share parts of this with them. Can I share some names of books that talk about co-regulation? Yes. I'm going to share that in just a moment. I just have to look it up. Thank you so much. Helpful going to read Brainstorm. Okay, amazing. Okay, great. So are there any other kind of, before I go into the books, I just have to look up the name that I'm thinking of. Are there any other questions or comments that you wanted to talk about or have any?
If not, that's okay. We'll give it
That's also okay.
15 seconds. Yeah.
Okay, so this is another one. The whole Brain Child is also written by Daniel Siegel. This is
Great
not an
book.
ad. You'd think that he that he's telling me to promote his books. It's a really, really good one. I really like that one. Another really good one that I like. I haven't read it in a while, but is definitely the Dr. Becky book is really good. I think she does really good work with younger children. But I think another good one is Tiny Humans, Big Emotions. That's how to navigate like tantrums and meltdowns. And there's a whole section in there about co-regulation, and that's by Alyssa Campbell. Okay. Are we good, Dr. Rabbi Haas, for a few minutes? You
Yeah, we
want
can
it?
take
Okay.
one or two more questions. Yeah.
Okay. For the teachers amongst us, how can we regulate an entire class of dysregulated youth? That's a really good question. Wow. Whew. I'm taking a breath for you, a whole classroom. That's really, really intense. I actually worked at a school for many years, so I can understand. And I actually attempted to teach an advisory class, and that was really challenging. So I feel you. I got a sliver of a taste of what that feels like. I think what might be helpful sometimes, like we were talking about sensory overload, sometimes it could be turning off the lights. Just turning the lights off, right? And especially in a school, the lights are like so bright. Turning the lights off and just naming it. Like we are excited today. There's a lot of energy in here, right? Because when you say dysregulated, again, it's vague, so I'm trying to like understand the question. I don't know if that means like not listening or dysregulated. I can imagine, I worked in a middle school, is just like a lot of energy and a lot of kids, so I can imagine that maybe turning the lights off and just naming it. Like there's a lot of energy here, right? Not following classroom rules. Yeah, that's really rough. And that's kind of where it leans into discipline, you know? But I would recommend just for regulation, you know, to turn the lights off and to say, okay, everybody, you know, even have everyone stand up and do like five jumping jacks, like release energy, right? Like it's really intense in here right now. As a teacher, you can name it for everyone, and to then say, let's all sit down, and you could do this kind of slight meditation I did with you guys. Feel your feet on the ground, and take a really deep breath. Right? This is class now, right? We released our energy. The lights are off. This is a break. This is a pause, right? I can't teach like this. And let's do what we can to kind of get it together. So let's all take a breath together. Sometimes that can helpful. And then if there are certain individuals, which I'm sure, that have a harder time regulating themselves, you know, maybe it's about kind of giving a group assignment and speaking individually to those students. But I know it's really hard. I hope that answered. I know it's much more complicated. When I give my 8-year-old daughter options to calm herself, that makes her even more activated during her storm. What are your thoughts? Interesting that that's overwhelming for her. What if you were to say, this is what we're going to do right now? Right? We're going to put on music, or we're going to go to the grocery store. But that's interesting. I love that she could say that. Oh my gosh, what a bright little girl. I love that she could say that it makes her even more overwhelmed. That's not what she needs. She doesn't want options. We want our kids to tell us what they need. So maybe then you say, you know, what this is what we're going to do right now. We're going to get out of the house, or we're going to leave this room. But again, change the room, change the environment. And I would actually say, thank you for telling me what you need. How to handle when your 10-year-old daughter is mean to you. I empathize with this. That's really, really tough. That's really, really hard. It sounds like you need some boundaries with your child of, you know, even when you're angry or even when you're upset, you know, it's really hurtful to mommy, you know, when you're mean to me. And that's actually not a way that you could speak to mommy, you know. What do you need, a break right now? Or, you know, sometimes, have you guys heard of hangry, right? Like hungry, angry, no, it's not hangry. I'm trying to remember what it's called. I used to do this in school, that it's like hungry, angry. Oh, halt. Hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, right? That there are different reasons why children kind of are mean sometimes, or sometimes, you know, act out. Sometimes they're really hungry, or, you know, they're angry, or they're lonely, or they're tired. But, you know, when your 10-year-old is mean to you, it could mean that you need to create boundaries around the way she speaks to you, or to help redirect, you know, what's really going on for her. But that's really hard. That's really hard. Okay, I think we're good to pause
All
here.
right.
Oh.
We are good. Yes.
Okay. Thank you everyone for joining. This was really,
Yes.
I just hope that something that I shared tonight, you know, resonates with you, and that you could take home and implement in your home, and to know that we're all in this together. So thank you for having me. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you, Ariella, for your enlightening and very helpful presentation, and for this great Q&A here at the end. I'm sure that everyone here learned so many things they can apply to their lives and the lives of their children. I know someone who dealt with bedtime for three boys, five and under, right before I got on, so I know how important this can be on a daily basis. And thank you, everyone here, for joining us. Please share your feedback on our survey that will pop up after the webinar. We read each and every response and appreciate you taking the time to fill it out.